you for visiting HawkeyeDrive.com, your stop for Iowa football, men's basketball content. I'm Brendan Stiles, and welcome to our 10th edition this season of the Talking Hawks podcast, exclusively on HawkeyeDrive.com. Iowa, you know, the Hawkeyes had their opportunity last Saturday. They had an opportunity. All they had to do was beat Minnesota, and we would be talking about this team right now being in a four-way tie for first place in the Legends Division entering the month of November. That didn't happen. They had a 21-10 lead on the road against a Minnesota team that was, let's be honest, they were not a good football team. They came in with a 1-6 record, 0-3, and, you know, even though it's a rivalry game, this is one of those games that Iowa should be able to put away, and they just weren't able to. The Gophers ended up winning 22-21 after trailing 21-10 in the fourth quarter. Florida Rosedale is residing in Minneapolis for another year, and as a result, Iowa is now 5-3. And you look at their schedule in November here, it looks challenging now. It looks challenging because Michigan comes in Saturday to Iowa City. They're 7-1. Michigan State 6-2. Purdue's 500 at the moment, 4-4. That's a game in West Lafayette. And then, of course, Iowa ends the season at Nebraska. Cornhuskers are 7-1. But just going back to this game for a second here last Saturday, what amazes me about what happened is, and we'll get to the onside kick here in a minute, but what amazes me about what happened is the Hawkeyes got an unbelievable outing from Marcus Coker. Career high 252 yards rushing, 32 carries. He had 2 touchdowns. He didn't have a single run where he lost yards. The least amount of yards he gained on a carry last Saturday was 0. That would be the least. I can't even remember if he had a stop or no gain. But the fact of the matter is, you go 32 carries where you don't lose yards on any of those carries. You don't have any loss of yards. And you get a career high out of a running back like that. Usually that's a sign that it's something that Chris Rowell and I talked about before. If you can run the football, why would you stop? Iowa was able to do that for most of this game. What ended up killing this team in the end on Saturday was, well, for one thing, the miscues in the red zone. Iowa came in with the best red zone offense of any team in the Big Ten and the second best red zone defense of any team in the Big Ten. The Hawkeyes were 26 of 27 in the red zone on offense. Only one empty possession. They had 3 of them Saturday against Minnesota. One of them, the first one, Mike Meyer has a chip shot field goal that 99 times out of 100 he's making. The second one, you had a sack on third down that pushed him out of the red zone, and then Meyer missed a second kick. And really, what amazed me the most about that situation was that third down, just before Vandenberg got sacked, Iowa called a timeout. They called a timeout, so they had a chance to review the play and draw it up at the way they wanted it. And then they just weren't able to execute. And then in the third quarter, you had the fumble. Iowa got into the red zone, and Vandenberg got sacked and fumbled. And it allowed Minnesota, instead of Iowa going up by double figures, Minnesota ended up getting a field goal, and it's a 4-point game. So right there, they had their chances. Iowa had its chances and just wasn't able to come through. Now, as far as the onside kick goes, I'll preface by saying that Kirk Ferentz should get a little credit in the sense that he owned up to what happened on Tuesday. He took accountability for it. And I think that's something that people wanted to see. But initially, he didn't. He mentioned it as lack of execution. And I asked him one of those things. Was this something that you had prepared for or were anticipating at that moment in time? And he said, to their credit, it probably made perfect sense, and they stole a possession. And they were able to execute the onside kick, and Iowa wasn't able to execute on the return. what I don't understand, and I realize it's a line that the coaches and players use after every game they lose, but what I don't understand is in that situation, first of all, Minnesota wasn't going to be showing onside kick until the very last second. Jerry Kill made that clear in his press conference Saturday after the game. What I don't understand is that's a situation where when that ball is kicked, Jason White was really the only player that had any chance of getting to it, and he got creamed by two guys coming right at him once the ball sailed over his head. And there wasn't a single Iowa player anywhere near the ball when it came down and went beyond the 10 yards. I don't know how that could be considered lack of execution when it's one of those things that there was nothing that Iowa could do about it. They weren't lined up properly. It's not like if you're going to say it was lack of execution, it was lack of execution from the very start. It wasn't when that play happened. It was before that play happened. And that's not something that I feel should be solely placed on the players. Anyway, Minnesota got that onside kick, and this is after a touchdown that Golden Gophers scored. They get the ball back. They score again. And by the way, what really baffles me the most about what happened with that onside kick is the fact that Minnesota did it a year ago. Now, granted, it was a different circumstance. That was in the last year's game. That was in the first quarter when the Golden Gophers tried that. But the same result happened. They recovered it, and they got a touchdown on the ensuing drive. Same thing happens here. And the other thing that you notice is on that fourth down, on the fourth down play where Marquise Gray scores, Iowa called a timeout, but they didn't call a timeout right away. There were at least 5 or 6 seconds that came off the clock before a timeout was called. So, and who knows, in the grand scheme of things, obviously Iowa wasn't able to move the ball offensively on its final possession. But if it was, you have to wonder if those 5 or 6 seconds could have been a difference. It was a poorly coached game. It was a poorly played game when it was all said and done. And now, again, going forward, the schedule does not get easy. Michigan comes into Kinnick Stadium Saturday. The Wolverines are ranked 13th in the country in the AP poll. They're ranked 15th in the BCS. This is the first ranked opponent Iowa has played all season. Penn State was not ranked when Iowa played Penn State. The Nittany Lions are ranked now, but they were not a month ago when they played each other at Beaver Stadium. This is the first ranked opponent Iowa's played all year. Michigan comes in with a 7-1 record. New head coach, Brady Hoke. You have new coordinators, Al Borges on the offensive side, Greg Madison on the defensive side. Greg Madison's a name a lot of you should be familiar with. His son, Brian Madison, played at Iowa. He's a defensive lineman. The Wolverines are a clearly different team than they were last year, or the last 2 years under Rich Rod. They're clearly different. You look at Denard Robinson. Yeah, he's not that great of a thrower, but he's still a dynamic runner. And not only that, Michigan's ground game in general is better. It's second in the Big Ten. The Wolverines average 245 yards a game on the ground. And as we've seen pretty much throughout the season, teams have been able to run the ball on Iowa's defense. This is one of those situations where if the Hawkeyes can't put themselves in position to keep him in check and keep that running game in check, it could be a long afternoon. And while he's not a great thrower, he's got good receivers around him. And when you consider that Iowa, defensively, the pass defense is ranked last in the Big Ten at the moment, that's an issue. That could be an issue on Saturday. And then conversely, you look at the defensive side of the ball for the Wolverines. They're much better. They're much better. Last year, I will never forget this as long as I live. Last year, before the Michigan game, that Tuesday when Ferentz had his press conference, we were talking with players. One of the players I got a chance to talk to that day was Julian Vandervelde. And I distinctly remember him describing that defense Michigan had last year under Greg Robinson as controlled chaos. That was the phrase he used. And that's exactly what it was. They couldn't stop anything. Iowa got 38 points on the Wolverines last year. I got 30 on them the year before. Now, Iowa's offense is capable of putting up those kinds of points if they're playing okay defenses, maybe, or mediocre defenses. Michigan's is pretty good this year under Madison. They forced 20 turnovers. And the offense that the Wolverines have has found a way to capitalize off of those turnovers. That's why they're 7-1. This is a completely different team. You know, Michigan's coming into this game favored, and they deserve to be favored, quite frankly. And Iowa, you know, the Hawkeyes probably can make this a game on Saturday. They might even win on Saturday. But I can't blame anybody out there for having doubts after what happened last Saturday. I couldn't blame any of you for feeling that way. I mean, again, Minnesota. This is a Minnesota team that lost to New Mexico State. I'm not gonna say anything really about North Dakota State, because North Dakota State's proven to be a really good team in the FCS. But they lost to New Mexico State. They lost to this Michigan team that's coming to Iowa City this weekend 58-0. They lost 45-17 to Purdue. I mean, Minnesota really wasn't that good, but they were a team that had nothing to lose. Really, I guess other than Floyd, they were basically playing for pride and wanting to keep that trophy. And they somehow found a way to do it. So it's going to be interesting to see how Iowa responds. Because really, from what I've heard and from what I've seen, people have been comparing this loss not just to last year's game against Minnesota, but I've heard people compare Iowa losing this game to when Iowa lost to Western Michigan in 2007. It's reached that kind of proportion. And this isn't really one of those situations where a quick fix could be coming right away. Even if Iowa does win on Saturday, you can't sit here and say, oh, that cures everything. So we'll have to wait and see what happens. But the one thing Iowa does have going for it on Saturday is the fact that it is at Kinnick Stadium. And Michigan, I mean, Michigan's played two road games this year against Northwestern and Michigan State. They lost to Michigan State. And the Northwestern game, they were down by 10 points at halftime before coming back and scoring 28 unanswered. So, it could be a good game. But you have to wait and see what happens. It's one of those things that could be a week-to-week situation. The other bit of good news for Iowa is that Keenan Davis should be able to play Saturday. They clearly missed him on offense and last week with the ankle injury. And it sounds like Mikhail McCall might be able to play Saturday, which would be remarkable considering that injury he had in the opener against Tennessee Tech looked like he was going to be done for the year. And in just a matter of 2 months, he could be very well back on the field. He's dressed out the last couple weeks. So that might be another thing to keep an eye on. Got a strong podcast for you here this week. Coming up in the next segment, Tom Kakert from Hawkeye Report will join me to reflect back a little on last Saturday's game and look ahead to this Saturday. And then, of course, in the final segment here, I will be joined once again by former Iowa defensive back Chris Rao. We will discuss all things basically regarding the Hawkeyes, as well as the Pick'em games for this week. And a reminder, if you want to participate in this week's HawkeyeDrive.com Pick'em, you still have until Friday at 5 p.m. Central to do so. When you go to the homepage, HawkeyeDrive.com, you'll see the page 24 Heisman Road. Hover over that. You'll see the Pick'em page. Click it there. 10 games listed, including Iowa, Michigan, in just submit your picks to HawkeyeJive@gmail.com. Remember to include a score or your Iowa-Michigan prediction. We'll use that in the event of any tiebreakers that may exist, and we've had a few of those this year. When we come back, Tom Kakert will join me, and later, Chris Rao. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Talking Hawks podcast, exclusively on HawkeyeDrive.com. I'm Brendan Stiles. I'm pleased to be joined this week by Tom Kakert from Hawkeye Report. Tom, how's it going?
Good. You're really pleased to have me on here?
Yeah, I mean, well, it's nice when I can get guests to come on. So
happy to do it anytime.
I guess I'll just jump right to Tuesday's events here before looking back at last Saturday. The big story, I think, is with the onside kick, and when Ferentz was asked about it, just almost like he second-guessed himself, something that we usually don't see when he's talking.
Yeah.
Just what, I guess, is your observation just with that and then just with some of the other things that were said on Tuesday?
Well, I think he owned it, which was kind of interesting to see, that he said, hey, you want to throw it on somebody, throw it on me. And they went into more detail than he did on Saturday and saying, you know, I thought about calling that timeout right there and probably should have. And, yeah, I guess that was maybe the big story of the day is, you know, when he kind of threw himself under the bus a little bit on the punt last year or the non-punt by Wisconsin. And but overall, you know, it's a pretty average Tuesday of, but you know, I think the team's kind of moved on from what happened on Saturday.
One other thing that was discussed heavily was the defense in particular was stopping the run and what happened there in the D-line. Just what, I guess, is your overall assessment based on what you've seen through eight games now?
Well, I thought before the season, wrote about it before the season, that the biggest concern for this football team would be the defensive line. That's proven to be true. With Norm Parker's defense, you have to have a good defensive line. You have to have a defensive line that can get penetration, stop the run, create pressure on a quarterback. If you don't have that, the back end's going to struggle. That's just how it's set up. And it's 11 guys working together, but you got to have that front line side of things. You got to have the defensive line able to get the pressure, able to stuff that run, and create third and longs, and get after the quarterback. And they haven't done that on a consistent basis this year at all.
What has, I guess, because obviously you run a message board and you deal with fans' interaction on a regular basis, what's kind of been the mood that you've noted, that you've picked up on since that game Saturday? Because I don't think anyone's excusing them for losing to Minnesota, but at the same time, it seems like it's reached, you know, higher levels, kind of like maybe Western Michigan in 07.
Yeah, one thing we have to caution yourself on, and I do too, is the decibel level sometimes is it's a small number of guys that are shouting the loudest kind of situation where people are upset about it. But how many of those people are really, truly upset? And it seems like a lot of times it's just a very vocal minority that are out there. Now, are fans upset about losing to Minnesota? You know, a Minnesota team that you know, got beat 58-0 by this same Michigan team that's coming to Iowa City? Yeah, I think they've got a right to be upset. But is it the end of the world? Is it something you fire a coach over? No, it's hardly reaches that level, and it doesn't. To me, it really doesn't matter that Kirk Ferentz makes $4 million a year. There's people you get paid the market price. That's how it works in business.
When you see Michigan coming in, this is pretty much a different team from what Iowa's gone up against the last few years. And just besides Brady Hoke coming in and having new assistants on board, it just seems like they maybe are a little bit more confident just in like their game plan and what they want to do. What are your thoughts on this team, especially considering that this is the first-ranked opponent Iowa's played all year?
Yeah, and this is it's a very different team. They're not running as much of the spread like they did under Rich Rod. Mm-hmm. Coach Hoke and Al Borges are doing things a little bit differently. One of the interesting things they're doing is they're using some situations where they have Devin Gardner, their backup quarterback, in there, and they're splitting Denard out, and they haven't even really thrown to him. He's been more of a decoy, but it'll be interesting to see what they do. And then defensively, you've got a completely different defense. Rich Rod had this, you know, the 5-D back.
Control chaos is what Julian Vanderbilt described.
Yeah, it didn't work. Mm-hmm. I mean, it got exploited all over the field. This year, it's more conventional. You got Greg Madison, who's probably got some pretty good idea of what Iowa likes to do on both sides of the football. Not even just from, you know, but his son. But, you know, one of the interesting stories about that is when Kaczynski was hired, one of the things he did that spring was go down to Florida and work with Greg Madison on how to teach D-line and do it at a high level. So there's a lot of ties here.
A couple more questions here. When obviously the big thing everyone's going to be talking about this week is how is this defense going to stop Denard? I don't know if they'll necessarily be able to stop him, but I'll ask you, how do you feel they could, you know, at least maybe keep him in check if they're not able to completely contain him?
Maybe they have to knock him out of the game like they did last year. I mean, that's maybe the best way to control him. I mean, he's a dynamic player. But the one thing that he's done is throw a lot of interceptions this year. He's thrown 11 interceptions this season. And when you've turned the ball over like that, Iowa's been a pretty opportunistic team, especially at home, creating turnovers. So I think that's something maybe for fans to watch, is Denard will throw the ball up for grabs a lot.
And I'll just get you out of here on this. This game Saturday, being at Kinnick Stadium, a chance for Iowa to bounce back after what happened last week. Do you, in addition to turnovers, because I'm getting the sense that you feel that that's the biggest thing that has to happen, what are some of the other things that you feel Iowa has to be able to do to, you know, at least hang with a team like Michigan, if not be able to pull an upset?
Best way you can control Denard Robinson or force turnovers, knock him out of a game, or not let him have the football at all. You got to grind the clock, much like Iowa did for about three quarters of the game against Minnesota. You know, they grinded the clock. They had a huge advantage in time of possession. If you can do that and keep Denard on the sidelines, I think you give yourself a better chance to win.
It's Tom Caker from HawkeyeReport.com. Tom, thank you very much, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Talking Hawks podcast, exclusively on HawkeyeDrive.com. I'm Brendan Stiles. I'm joined once again this week by former Iowa defensive back Chris Rowell. And Chris, I'm going to cut right to it here. The fact that Iowa lost this game to Minnesota a week ago and lost out on an opportunity to be tied for first place in the division, what did you take away from what you saw in that game?
Well, what I took away from what we saw in this game is one thing that fans were looking to get back to is the run. That's one thing I took back from the game more on a positive note. More on a negative note, what I took away from the game is that we passed soundly, of course, yes, because we got the run going or whatnot, but then we had Keenan hurt. We missed two field goals. Special teams is a big aspect in any game, and a lot of people say, oh, special teams is just to get you field position. Yes, and sometimes you can score on special teams also. I figured that Coach got out coach when it came down to it once again. I just figured that one more thing about the team is that we have found out about ourselves this week. Like I say, after a game, just try to figure out where we at or whatnot. But Michigan's coming in. Michigan's coming in with a lot of steam behind them or whatnot. They only lost one game so far in a conference. So we need to really put it together. We got two more home games, and then we off to Purdue after that. But It's going to be a tough four games just to get one win out of it, and Purdue is not going to be an easy team to get a win off of.
The one play, you briefly mentioned special teams there, the one play that seems to be magnified more than anything else was the onside kick there in the fourth quarter. I've got two questions kind of based on this. First of all, you were a guy that played special teams, and I'm sure you were out there on kickoff returns. You see Jason White in this situation where, I mean, first of all, they don't realize that the onside kick's coming. Ferentz acknowledged that his hands team wasn't out there. And Minnesota just basically decided, okay, Iowa doesn't have the hands team out there. We're going to try this. Got nothing to lose. And that ball, if you're in Jason White's position, you see that ball sailing over your head. And all of a sudden, there's two guys from Minnesota just coming your way, just nailing you. And really nobody else has a chance at the ball. What's your reaction like when you think about how that plays out and just in general your thoughts on what went wrong, what occurred?
Well, my first thought is, holy crap, here we go. It's just one of those deals. When you're a guy just on the regular kickoff return, you're sitting here like, okay, here we go. It's going to be a regular kick. I'm expecting to go back to Jordan or KMM or whoever else back there with Bernstein. You're not really thinking about an onside kick unless coach really says something to you. But at the same time, you have to be alert no matter what. It's the end of the game. It's a tight game, and you need to expect something unless. And just depends on the timeouts that were left in the game. I just figured that it's just one of those deals. If you see a guy coming to crush you, you know something's wrong, and then a ball up in the air – It communication-wise, you're, like, sitting here like, okay, this guy's about to hit me. Someone needs to come and step up and get this ball. But special teams is probably the most important play in the game just because it can make or break a team. And I was watching the game last night with Northern Illinois and Toledo, a guy – had two kickoff returns back-to-back, and, like, neither team wanted to sit there and kick it to each other. And that's an aspect where you're going to get good field position or bad field position or score. But back to this past week's game, it's just one of those deals. I think Coach Ferentz got out-coached, and that was a great play on Minnesota's behalf.
You mentioned how you feel that Ferentz is out-coached. And one thing I took away from Tuesday at his press conference is that it's one of the few times that you really kind of notice him second guess himself on what happened. Because Saturday after the game, I actually was one of the ones that asked him, okay, did you prepare for this or anticipate this coming? Because there was 8 minutes left in the game. And he said, well, you know, it probably made sense for them to do it when they did. And he credited them in execution, said that Iowa wasn't able to execute. And that seems to be a line that you hear a lot after losses, is just whether it's from fans or from the players, they're saying lack of execution. How do you, I guess, in describing that last play to you, how do you describe that as lack of execution when it's a situation where really, Jason White was the only guy that was anywhere close to the ball, and he didn't really have that good of a chance at being able to recover. It was more Minnesota making the play.
Well, at the same time, as a coach, you need to be aware of all situations. That's what it comes down to. You knew that a onside kick was coming at some times. And so
there's 8 minutes left in the game.
But I think it depends on just the flow of the game. And Minnesota, it's just one of those deals you have to be aware of, because sometimes in the most obvious times, you sit there and be like, okay, we're ready. Either way, we're going to go with our regular or we're going to go with our hands team. Minnesota had a lot of steam going on, especially with us missing kicks. And it's just one of those deals like, hey, can we get this early and put this game away from Iowa's aspect? But at the same time, Minnesota was just chipping and chipping away, and they hung in the game, and they were a dangerous team, and the guys felt good about themselves, and that's what happens. But at the same time, like I said, eight minutes left in the game. I can see if it was the beginning of the fourth quarter, but it was in the middle. The prime time when you catch someone sleeping, don't know what's going on, and they did it right. And I just feel that it's just in the fourth quarter lately, it's been rough for us, especially when it comes down to crunch time. And that's pretty much all I can say. It's just one of those deals that, I mean, you have to be aware as a coach. That's why you're a coach.
I guess the other thing I would ask, too, along these lines is, where would you as a former player draw the line at the whole notion of execution or lack thereof when a certain play takes place? Do you feel that it is ultimately something that falls on the player regardless of what happens? Or can there be moments where it comes down to the coaching more than as to what actually takes place on the field?
As a player, the coaches put you in a position to execute or whatnot and be aware of what's going on. Were they aware of that? No. The player, you can't really do much when you got like a million guys coming after you. You can't. I mean, like, most of the guys is probably looking above or whatnot, watching the ball, and that's what you're taught. You're taught to watch the ball, get off the tee, and then you respond. And with that, Jason White pretty much probably had to take that hit no matter what, and for someone else to be able to come from behind him and get the ball. And most of the time, most of the guys behind him are offensive linemen or
I think it was Kerman, a tight end.
And it's just one of those deals where the guys that were behind Jason White were not the fastest guys to be able to respond fast or whatnot. But I'm sure Coach take a lot of pride in special teams, and we do a lot of practice, no matter what it is, a lot of special teams practice, especially on Thursdays, just preparing, and also on Fridays, just one of those walkthroughs. I can say one thing. I'm sure Coach will really be all over this week and probably the rest of the season for things like this. But, I mean, it's going to be a tough one. And it's like you say, it's going to be a hard one to swallow for Coach and the team.
Along those lines, obviously you're going to be frustrated anytime you lose a game. But when it's a situation where you're playing a team like a Minnesota that was 1-6. Really, all they were playing for was just keeping possession of Florida Rosedale. And this is a team that, for the second year in a row, gets Iowa's number. And a situation where this season, you look at two of the losses, they've lost games to Iowa State and Minnesota that could have really gone either way, except for a couple of plays here or there. And but because those are the teams they lost to, those are rivals, you're going to see fans more upset probably than they would be after a loss to, say, Ohio State or Michigan. You know, just how much more frustrating does it get when you see that it's a rival that beat you and it's a team that really wasn't playing for much more other than pride and, in this case, keeping a trophy?
It's more frustrating on a fans aspect. Players, it just depends on how you lose. If a team came to bring it to you and they won a game, more hats off to them. But when you sit there and not have no motivation or either you just get beat up, I mean, and it was – I didn't see nothing that was going Minnesota way outside of us pretty much pooping on ourselves and whatnot. It's just one of those deals where – you sit there and think as a player, like, gosh, we really lost to this team, and I can't really say much about it. It's just that you're stunned as a player, like, I can't really believe this happened. And I give – with a team like Iowa State, like I said, Iowa State came and brought it to us compared to Minnesota where they were just hanging around, and there go their chance or whatnot. So it's just one of those deals. You sit there and you got to live with it for the next year or 2 years, 3 years down the line. But, I mean, you don't have no bragging rights. You can't sit here and argue with no one talking about a game or whatnot. You can't really sit and say anything. People like, hey, you guys lost to Iowa State, and you're like, yeah, we did. You lost to Minnesota. Yeah, we did, and we lost in a rough way.
One of the other things, just kind of moving away from the onside kick, is just the defense in general. The first three quarters, for the most part, there was one scoring drive Minnesota had, that one touchdown and a field goal. They had 10 points. But in the fourth quarter, there Iowa has a 21-10 lead, and then that's suddenly when Iowa's defense falls apart. Minnesota is able to pick up yards bit by bit and move the ball. What are some of the things that you're noticing with this defense that, I guess, is it something where the problems are evident and there's just nothing being done about it, or is it just a matter of things are being done but there's just they're just not able, I guess, to execute, for lack of a better word?
I was getting ready to say one thing when I went to the Indiana game. I realized is that our corners play off a little bit more than what they were when I was actually playing. I seen Sean back 7 yards, 10 yards, maybe sometimes, and they don't really play up press anymore as much as they used to. And I'm sitting here saying, like, okay, these guys is giving up 5 yards automatically. So, and you're backpedaling. So it's just one of those deals where, like, I guess it's one of those deals is saying, hey, you guys take this 5 yards, you're not going over top of our head. I don't know what it is, what's going on with the defensive scheme now. Now that I've been away for 2 years. But it's one of the biggest things that I've seen was that our defensive backs are playing a little too far off. I would like to see them mix it up, I'm sure, like anyone else. Pressure, the defensive line, they're getting better. Our linebackers just banged up. So it's just one of those deals is just that we can't find an answer. Everyone thinks they have an answer for everything. It's just one of those deals that is always a question mark in every position. You would think that the defensive secondary would be ready to go now that we found Jordan Bernstein and Tanner Miller there at the safeties position, and then we had some solid corners. But right now, that's not what it is. And we haven't really given up big plays passing-wise. It's more the stuff that the teams are grinding their way out to scoring.
And just switching over to the offense, they got a career day out of Marcus Coker. He rushed for 252 yards. I believe it's the third highest of an Iowa running back's ever had in a game. And he had a couple of touchdowns down there in the red zone. But the red zone is kind of what made the difference, if you think about it, because Iowa came into the game with the best red zone offense of any team in the Big Ten. I think they only missed out on one opportunity the whole season. They missed out on three last Saturday. They had a field goal that was missed by Mike Meyer. It was a chip shot. Then there was a situation where Vandenberg got sacked on third down, pushed him out, and then Meyer ended up missing another field goal from further distance, and then there was a fumble in the third quarter coming on a blitz that wasn't picked up. Just what are some, is that something that you just see as being maybe correctable, just given what they've been able to do most of the year? Or do you feel that this is something that can maybe continue to be a problem down the road when they're going up against some of these quality teams that they're going to be facing?
I would say most of the stuff is correctable. As we've seen that Reef gave up three sacks, that's one of those deals you won't see too many teams, a guy give up three sacks unless he's a terrible offensive tackle or guard or offensive lineman, period. That's very correctable unless the coach don't have any other choices. I would say with the fumbles, you know, it's just one of those deals you got to have confidence and keep holding the ball or whatnot. Misses with the kickers, I mean, the offensive line doing their job. The holder might not be doing their job. It's all about the kicker just laying perfection or whatnot. Is something going on in his brain? We don't know. I mean, did he kick it the wrong way? I don't know. I've never been a specialist like that. But I figure that he can correct this, and he should be – I think that we'll be all right. It's just as long as we get back to the bases, and that's what Iowa needs to get back to. If we want to win any game the rest of this season, we got coming with a tough 14, starting with Michigan this week.
Just transitioning now to Michigan, one of the things that obviously is going to be talked about a lot this week, and has already been talked about a lot this week, is Denard Robinson. Coach Ferentz made the comment Tuesday that he feels that he's a more confident player now than he was a year ago, and Micah Hyde even referred to him as a smarter player than he was a year ago. And when you're facing a guy like this and you're facing a ground attack like Michigan's, because their running backs have gotten it going recently too. They had a running back that ran for 170 yards last week. You know a team's going to pound the rock at you like this. What are the things that you're doing to make it so that way you are able to stop the run? Because obviously the coaches are going to be putting a major emphasis on that this week.
Well, I'm sure it's a major emphasis for Iowa also. If you think about it, if you got a team that's going to come and sit here and run a ball on you, you better expect us to sit here and concentrate on that also and find someone on scout team or something like that to be a Denard Robinson and just run all over the place and then dink the ball whenever you need to. It's just one of those deals. I personally feel that Michigan might end up coming in here trying to pass the ball. I mean, Iowa right now, we're off balance just looking at the game from this past week. It's just one of those deals where Denard Robinson is a very, very dangerous guy. Like you said, he's way smarter than what he used to be. He used to run. But then at the same time, he still can't pass the ball. Now that we see that Michigan is starting to open up a two-quarterback system, Denard Robinson, I just think this year he's been actually down a bit because people didn't figure it out, Denard Robinson. And I think Iowa should be able to figure him out this week. But the guy is a very dangerous guy, and whenever you got your quarterbacks and your running backs clicking on all cylinders, you got a rough out on coming.
Do you see major concerns here? Because just given the fact that this defense pretty much throughout the entire season has struggled being able to keep contained against mobile quarterbacks. You saw last week Marquise Gray was able to get a touchdown run on fourth down. You had Trey Roberson the week before from Indiana was able to move the ball effectively. Dan Persa. Is this something that could end up being a major problem as this game progresses on Saturday?
I think Denard Robinson is completely different from every single one of those quarterbacks. Marquise Gray, he can throw a little bit more than Denard Robinson. Persa, he's more of a pass-first guy compared to Denard Robinson. The kid from Indiana, I think, is the probably the only kid that is very similar to Denard Robinson. But Denard Robinson is one of those guys, he get the ball in his hand, you just never know what'll happen. Not too many passing plays, but he'd do what he needs to do to get a first down or gain some yards. It's just one of those deals. The guy is so dangerous, you just don't know what's going to happen, especially if he can get a couple passes here and there and you got a team off balance and you're sitting here like, hey, what play should we play? Should we blitz or not? It's just going to be it might be a rough outing. You just never know what's going to come out of this kid. Will he show up or will he get injured or something like that?
And then just switching quickly over to the offense here and going up against a Michigan defense that's just light years better than what it was a year ago. I remember last year before they played, I was talking to Julian Vanderbilt. He described them as controlled chaos. That's how he described the defense that was implemented by Greg Robinson this year. Greg Madison, who's a father of a former teammate of yours, Brian Madison, is come in there and they're just a lot better. I believe they forced 20 turnovers this season and have a +6 turnover margin. It just, what are the things that you notice with Michigan's defense that makes them, I guess, a better team and allows them to be in this position where they could come in here and have a 7-1 record and have a, you know, feel confident about playing Iowa as opposed to maybe last year or 2 years ago?
I would say the scheme, one, and toughness, two. The scheme, they were playing a 3-3-5, which Michigan had no reason to be playing the last couple of years. And then toughness, you see a lot of toughness. You see guys getting after it and a lot of energy. They are very similar to what Iowa used to play. They sit there and they play tough-nosed defense back there. Koufax, their leader back there at safety, he was out last week, but hopefully we'll see him this week. I mean, I don't want to see him this week because he's their best player on defense, I think, with a lot of energy. I would say he's the captain of that team. He gives them a lot of energy. I just figure that it's just the toughness that Coach Madison bring to the team. It reminds me of Iowa just because they had a lot of guys getting after the ball. And when you got a lot of guys getting after the ball, you expect to get hit left and right. And the more and more you get hit, you sit there and be like, oh, gosh, I don't want this ball in my hand. Or you're just thinking about it. Hopefully the game, the weather's pretty good where it's not too cold. Where when you have a defense that are hitting you left and right, you're bound to cough the ball up. And it's like you said, Michigan looked like a ball hawking team and just ready to go and prepare it this year. I didn't think that the defense would significantly improve, but they have this year.
How would you suggest Iowa's offense should go about attacking this Michigan defense? Because you say it reminds you a lot of what Iowa used to be like before this season. Just what are the, how do you sense, just from what you know, how would you sense how the offense is going to attack this, how Ken O'Keefe is going to dial up the plays on Saturday?
Like any game I would do, would play, we want to attack them with the run first and see how tough they are. When you sit there and run a ball up someone's throat, you're going to sit there and toughen up as a defense, or you go ahead and take it. And if we're able to run a ball, I'm sure we're going to open up to a play action or either some passes just to get a defense off of balance. But it's just one of those deals that we're going to run the ball and we're going to say, hey, we got Marcus Coker. He's the best running back in the league right now, rushing yards wise, and we're just going to run a ball. That's our strength. And then when we open up to our passing plays, we have one of the best receivers in the game right now in our conference also. So it's just one of those deals. If we can get a balanced attack or either just a run attack that's just very, very good this week, we should be able to be all right.
With all that being said, are you ready to go through the games for this week?
Yes, I am.
All right. Just a reminder, if you want to participate in this week's HawkeyeDrive.com Pick'em, you still have until Friday at 5 p.m. Central to do so. Just go to HawkeyeDrive.com. You'll see the page 24 Heisman Road. Hover over that. The Pick'em page is there. List of 10 games. Submit your picks to HawkeyeDrive@gmail.com. Remember to include a score or your Iowa-Michigan prediction this week. We'll use that in the event of any ties. I'd like to congratulate my dad for winning for the second time this season, last week's Pick'em. And we'll start, Chris, with a game of the Big 12 that looked interesting last week, but now maybe not so much. Texas Tech goes into Austin to take on the Texas Longhorns. Texas coming off pretty solid victory over Kansas last week, and they're just outside the top 25. Texas Tech, on the other hand, after going into Oklahoma and beating the Sooners, who were ranked third in the country and undefeated, they laid an absolute egg at home last week against Iowa State, losing 41-7 to the Cyclones. Now they got to go into Texas. They got to bounce back from that, go into Texas to take on a Longhorn team that I think it might be back on track here. I just have a hard time picturing Texas losing this game, especially at home. And I just feel Texas Tech, I don't know how they're going to recover from losing a game like that to Iowa State. So I'm going to go with the Longhorns.
I agree with you also with Texas. I don't see Texas Tech actually having a chance in this game other than our offense. Yes, their offense is pretty darn good, but they're not good enough to sit there and be able to take the beating that Texas will bring to them. One thing I was going to tell you about is that Iowa State played with a guy with his first start on a road last week, and they got demolished against Iowa State, and I was just like, wow. And that was the shocker to me about the game. It was a guy's first start.
And moving along here, so we both got Texas. We're going to stay in the Big 12 here at the next game. Oklahoma is now seventh in the country after thrashing Kansas State, as we both predicted last week. They're now playing at home against the Texas A&M team that somehow lost another second half lead, lost in overtime last week at home to Missouri, 38-31. A&M, I don't know how to explain it with them, because all three of their losses this year have been the same. They've had big leads and they let them get away. And now you're asking this team to go into Norman to take on an Oklahoma team that lost to A&M last year in College Station. So you know that that's going to be a motivator. And just the way they looked against Kansas State, particularly in the second half, scoring 44 unanswered, I just have a feeling the Sooners are going to keep it rolling, and I have a hard time believing they're going to lose the second game in a row at home. So I'm going to go with Oklahoma winning this game.
I agree with you. Also, Landry Jones had pretty much a career day last week with 509 yards, I think, passing. And I just look for the Sooners' offense to get better and their defense to get tougher. And I one thing I was going to tell you, Brandon, is that Oklahoma still has a chance to go to the national championship.
Maybe the national champ. I don't know so much about that. I think they have a very good shot winning the Big 12 still. You know, I mean, if they beat Oklahoma State that last game of the year, I think then they would have the tiebreaker. But with that being said, I don't know if the national championship is still a possibility, depending on how what else happens. They're going to need Boise. I think they're going to need Boise State to lose the game, and I just don't know if that's going to happen. But that's a discussion for later on down the road here. Moving on into the Big Ten. I guess this is the other big game of the Big Ten this week. I don't know. Wisconsin returns home to take on Purdue. The Badgers are 6-2 now. They return home after losing two straight games in the last minute on the road, where their defense gives up a big touchdown. It's pretty much the same thing happened again last week at Ohio State. The Buckeyes won that game. Now Wisconsin's no longer in the driver's seat in the leaders division, but they return home to take on a Purdue team that Michigan demolished a week ago in the Big House. Purdue, okay, maybe they're a little better than I gave them credit for at the beginning of the year, but I don't see how what happened last week, I don't see how it's going to be any different than what happened this week at Camp Randall Stadium. I think Russell Wilson, Monty Ball will bounce back, have big games, and I like the Badgers at home.
I agree also with you. Wisconsin is too good of a team to be where they are ranked right now, and it's just when you got two plays that goes wrong, and both of them pretty much the same play. Like you said, a Hail Mary is just one of those deals where it comes down to who want to catch the ball more and who want it more. It's unfortunate. I know Brett Bingham was sitting there scratching his head like, wow. It shouldn't have came down to this point, but, I mean, they play some pretty darn good teams, especially with Ohio State rising, and Michigan State played a tough game no matter what happened. They outplayed Michigan State throughout the game outside of some of the plays that didn't go their way. But Purdue is just one of those teams, like you say, when you come off a really good win the week before last week against Michigan, you feel good about yourself, and then you get throttled, and then you say, okay, we – going against a team that's pretty much a giant and we have no chance against. And you can't count Purdue out. That's one thing that we realize is that we can't count out Purdue, but Wisconsin too much, Wisconsin, especially being back home.
I think you meant to say their win was over Illinois and then they lost to Michigan.
Right.
But moving along here, we're going to the Big East, and this is kind of an interesting game. Cincinnati, funny enough, the one other time we've discussed the Bearcats on this podcast is the one game they've lost this season to Tennessee, but they're 6-1. They're currently the only undefeated team in the Big East, although they've only played two conference games. They're ranked 23rd in the country. They're taking on a Pitt team that, first of all, Iowa fans obviously are familiar with because Iowa played Pitt a couple months ago, but Pitt, they beat UConn a week ago. However, Ray Graham is out for the season now with a knee injury. And losing a guy like that, I just feel like really hurts this team as far as what it wants to do offensively. And even though this game's at home, I just think this sets up nicely for Cincinnati. But with that being said, I'm going to pick the Bearcats to win this game, but I don't feel like we know a whole lot about this team just yet. I think we will in the coming weeks, and they play teams like West Virginia and Syracuse and even Rutgers.
Right. I was going to say one thing about Pittsburgh, they got Zach Brown, who had a really good career, injury-plagued career in Wisconsin. The guy lost a couple pounds or whatnot, but hopefully he steps it up. But like you say, I can't go against Cincinnati, and Cincinnati has a senior leader in Zach Corrales and DJ Woods, and they have and Austin Peay on the at running back. Their defense is okay, but we'll really find out a lot about Cincinnati here down the line, like you says.
Now going into the SEC, no, this isn't the big SEC game. We'll get to that in a little bit. But another big game, though, features two top 10 teams. South Carolina is ranked 10th in the country now after beating Tennessee a week ago. They now head to Arkansas to take on the Razorbacks, who are ranked 8th in the country and currently only have one loss, which is to Alabama. This is a very huge game in the sense of it could very well determine who wins the SEC East. Because if South Carolina wins, all they have to do is beat Florida next week and they're going to a championship game. But if they lose, and they're currently tied for first place with Georgia right now, have the head-to-head tiebreaker. If they lose this game, the door's open for Georgia to make a run and win that division and be the East representative in the SEC title game. Arkansas crushed this team last year in South Carolina. And granted, that was with Ryan Mallett, but they had their way with the Gamecocks. And South Carolina, I feel like unless Alshon Jeffrey has a monster game, which he's fully capable of, but they don't have Marcus Lattimore anymore. He's out for the season with a knee injury. Unless Alshon Jeffrey comes up huge and Connor Shaw can have a big game for them at quarterback, I don't see how they go into Fayetteville and win. And I think Arkansas is one of those teams that's going to continue to click at least until they get to that game at the end of the year with LSU. So I got to go with the Razorbacks here.
I was going to say this is a very intriguing game, not just because this is like a second-tier game to the big game later on we'll talk about. But one thing about it is that, like you say, Arkansas is on the west. They're on the west side with Alabama and LSU, with all three of those be fighting for BCS. I mean, I really feel that this game is a huge fight for the second team into the BCS. Will they play favor towards the loser of the big game? Maybe, maybe not. But South Carolina has a chance of a lifetime to sit here and beat a team and get payback from last year. But South Carolina, they can possibly put a fight on towards the end of the year in a championship game and get themselves into a BCS game or being talked about. So I think this is huge for South Carolina, bigger for South Carolina than it is Arkansas. Arkansas still needs a couple prayers here. They won't be in a championship game, as we see. But at the same time, that you just never know with the SEC West. But I don't see either LSU or Alabama losing two games for Arkansas to get back in there. But, I mean, this is going to be a really good game with Marcus Lattimore not being in there. We sit here and be like, oh, they don't have a chance. But I'm going to give them a chance this week. No, it's not an upset. I don't think it'll be upset. But it's just one of those games where you need to find identity of your season without your star player. And this is going to be a huge game for South Carolina. This would be a big step for them also.
Now, briefly jumping into the Pac-12 here, this is a very important game as far as how the championship game for that conference could be determined. Arizona State is ranked 20th in the country. They're going to UCLA this weekend. Both teams are in the Pac-12 South. Because of USC's situation, the winner of this game's in control of their destiny for winning that division and being the South representative in the Pac-12 championship. Yes, UCLA, as bad as they looked against Arizona a couple weeks ago, if the Bruins went out, they would be in the Pac-12 title game. That being said, I don't see this happening on Saturday. Arizona State is clearly a more talented team than UCLA, and I think Brock Osweiler is going to have a huge game against this UCLA defense. I mean, if Nick Foles can pass for the yards that he did against UCLA's defense, I don't see why Osweiler can't. And you know Vontaze Burfict and that Sun Devil defense, they'll come crashing in on UCLA and whoever they have in place of quarterback. And, you know, maybe the Bruins put up a fight for a little bit since they're at home, but I just think the Sun Devils are clearly a better team, and I like Arizona State.
I was going to say, even if ASU doesn't get the job done, USC is going to get the job done at the end of the year against UCLA. UCLA, they just doesn't look good at all. Their coach is pretty much out of there, one foot out of there. It's just one of those deals, like you say. I mean, it's too much talent on Arizona State team for them to lose this game at UCLA.
All right, we're going to just go ahead now and talk about there's still a few more games we'll get to, but we're going to talk about the biggest game, if not of the season, definitely of this weekend. Number one, LSU. Number two, Alabama. They're meeting in Tuscaloosa Saturday night. Both teams, and the game's on CBS. Both teams are coming into this 8-0, 5-0. The winner, pretty for all intents and purposes, is going to be in the SEC championship game, and it has to be. If they go on, whoever wins this game, if they go undefeated, they're clearly going to be in the national championship game on January 9th. I'll get your thoughts here on this game first. Just how do you see this one playing out, given what you've seen from both teams?
It's a lot of things, man, you can sit here and talk about forever with this game. I just feel that with Alabama being at home, they have a huge home field advantage. But at the same time, LSU done won some key road games this year, beating Oregon down in Texas. You beat West Virginia at home. Those two games that stood out, and they dominated both of those games, no matter what the score says or whatnot. But their defense is the real deal. You could say the same thing for Alabama. I think Alabama has more talent, and they have a home field advantage. And Nick Saban is, and both coaches are pretty much big game coaches. And I feel that this week, and I sit here and I tell everyone, if you get a chance to go see LSU play, and this is the game to watch just for the rest of the year. LSU has a phenomenal defense led by Tyrone Mathieu. I just feel that, with my gut feeling, I'm going to pick Alabama because they have the best running back in the game right now, and that they should be able to do something with him. Not only run the ball, he can also catch. But I just think if it comes down to the quarterback play, LSU. But I'm going with Alabama home here. The environment be ready to go either way with either team. But I just feel that the key to the game and the X factor will be the quarterback.
I'll just start by saying that when between this being announced as a night game and Michigan and Iowa being announced as an 11 a.m. game, I was very happy because now I'll be able to get home in time to watch this game Saturday night on CBS. I'm going to agree with you. I think Alabama will win. And you mentioned as far as the difference, you mentioned it, Trent Richardson. I think he is the best running back in the country. I think he was my pick at the beginning of the season to win the Heisman Trophy. And one of the reasons why is I felt this is going to be the game where he has that Heisman moment. And we're on a national spotlight where everyone, and I mean everyone's going to be watching this game, except for maybe the fans of the teams that are playing Saturday night. Anyone that has any, you know, just small interest in college football, let alone a huge interest like you and I do, they're going to be watching this game. And I think it is going to be a slugfest. I think both defenses are going to come out ready to play. I think both teams are going to have a hard time moving the ball, quite honestly. But I think the difference is going to be as the game gets down to the wire, if Alabama can get that run game going with Richardson, I think eventually he's going to break a big run or maybe two big runs, and that's going to end up being the ultimate difference. And I think the Crimson Tide, especially with this game being in Tuscaloosa, I think they have a slight edge. Plus, I also heard that Nick Saban has never lost to the same coach 2 years in a row. And I don't know if that's all-time or just at Alabama, but he had, knowing that and knowing the LSU beat him last year, I have a hard time seeing that happen in 2 years in a row. So as good a team as LSU is, I just think Alabama's slightly better, and I'm going to agree with you on this and go with the Crimson Tide. Moving along, a couple more games taking place Saturday night. Number three team in the country, Oklahoma State, is playing host to a Kansas State team that fell to 17th after getting dominated at home by Oklahoma. Now they got to go into Stillwater to take on the Cowboys. K-State has a defense that they can hang around with Oklahoma State, but the Cowboys, their offense, I mean, you saw what Oklahoma did there, especially in the second half to K-State. I kind of see it almost picking up where it left off. And I don't want to say that Oklahoma State will absolutely destroy this team, but I could be, see it getting out of hand early and to the point where Kansas State could maybe play catch-up, but at the end of the day, it's just going to be too much Cowboys, so I like Okie State at home.
I was going to say, since I haven't had an upset pick of the week yet, I'm going to just go out the window and say that Kansas State win this game. Why? I don't have no clue outside of Kansas State pretty solid defense that they have. I don't like the offensive play that Kansas State has, but I tell you what, they only lost one game for a reason. You know, their offense did enough to win a game. But it's a couple things here and there with Kansas State that I've seen, which kind of weird to me is just the way that they play, and their quarterback is a really tough quarterback. But I'm going to pick Kansas State just because their defense is much better and tougher than Oklahoma State. Like I have said all year long, I still don't believe in Oklahoma State's defense. I figure if they can stop these guys and hold them to minimum plays, they should be ready to go since they have a pretty decent defense. But if they let what happened last week happen, they can be in a world of trouble, and this would be a free fall for them the rest of their season, and they wouldn't know what hit them.
And finally, we got another Pac-12 game, and this is a very intriguing one. Oregon is ranked 6th in the country. They're going up north to Seattle to take on Washington. Pretty nasty rivalry game. The reason this game is intriguing to me is because Oregon has a little trip to Palo Alto, California next week to take on Andrew Luck and the Stanford Cardinal, and that's a huge game. But I don't want to necessarily say this is a trap game because I think that's doing a disservice to a Washington team that's 6-2 right now. And their only two losses are to Nebraska and Stanford, and both of them came on the road. This has the feel of a trap game for Oregon, just because you still don't know what the situation is going to be with LaMichael James if he comes back or not. And the quarterback situation, Darren Thomas got benched recently in place of Bennett, and he had a huge game against Colorado. At the end of the day, I think Oregon will still win to set up that big matchup next weekend out west, but I could see Washington hanging around with them for quite a while, especially with this game being in Seattle. I'll take the Ducks, but it's going to be a close game.
I was going to say, Chris Polk is a phenomenal player, and also their quarterback Price that they have over there in West Washington. But I don't know if Darren Thomas got benched because the injury's still lingering or if this kid is just playing phenomenal. I mean, the kid, like anyone else would say, if you're sitting here practicing, you got a second-team quarterback, you would think that he should be ready to play in the game. He may not have as many reps, but he should be ready to go. And him, by being him being a freshman, he has a lot of energy, and he's ready to go in, and when he gets his chance, he's going to shine, and that's what's going on. And like you say, I think Darren Thomas, hopefully he should be ready to go this week. If not, the freshman take over and keep going. If he end up taking over more and more, people will sit here and be like, all right, Darren Thomas, what's going on? And this would be an exciting race in the springtime. But back to the game, LaMichael James, I feel that he can sit out one more game and get ready for next week, but this is going to be a tough one out in Seattle, Washington, like any other game in Seattle, Washington, just because of the rain. I think it play a huge factor. Just after watching what Washington did to Arizona this past week, and I know everyone pretty much beat down Arizona, but I like what they're doing, but not enough for Oregon.
All right, and now finally, you got Iowa. 5-3, 2-2 in the Big Ten, playing a huge game in the division against Michigan, who comes in ranked 13th. This is the first ranked opponent Iowa's played all season. 2 months in, that's hard to believe, I know. But Michigan comes in ranked 13th. They're 7-1 overall, 3-1 in the division, in a three-way tie for first place. This is a big game, obviously, for the Wolverines. This is a big game for the Hawkeyes. It's an 11 a.m. kickoff on ESPN. Chris, what are you going to be looking for? How you see it playing out?
What I'm looking for is just for us to bounce back. That's the biggest thing, us to bounce back, be able to run the ball with Marcus, be able to throw the ball with James. And the biggest thing is for our defense to contain Denard Robertson. If you can contain Denard Robertson, you'll be able to do a lot of things here differently. And I think we might go out of character and probably blitz him a little bit. Maybe not. But I just figured that we need to bring back some tough, hard-nosed, tough defense and get after Denard Robinson for the most part. And then I really would like to see the fans get back into the game this week. I know it was a tough, game for us to lose there in Minnesota, but I think the fans will play a big role if the guys, if the fans can come out there and support the team no matter what it is from kickoff to the end of the game. It's just one of the biggest things, and we appreciate the support, whatever comes, but it's just one of those deals that, as long as the fans there, we should be able to play a little harder for them just to be our 12th man. So I think the Hawkeyes will be able to win the game. I figure that the next four games, these next three games, we have a chance to actually win this game just because of our tough mentality. But Michigan is just one of those teams in a transition. If you were talking about Michigan team next year, you'd be like, okay, this might be a different type of team, because that'd be second year with Brady Hoke being head man. But I figure that the Hawks should be able to take care of business, and it's time for us to take care of business. We're at home, and we got home field advantage, and that's the biggest thing. And hopefully, like I said, hopefully the fans come out and cheer.
I'm going to just start off by saying that I think Michigan does win this game on Saturday, and the score I'm going to put on it is 27-17. I'll explain why in a second here. I do think Iowa will bounce back in the sense that I do think that they'll try to establish a running game, like you said. And I think the fact that this game is at Kinnick Stadium will, at least early on, will play to their advantage. What I see being a difference is, yes, they've had success against Denard Robinson in recent years, but it was a somewhat different scheme, and they didn't have quite as much talent at the other positions, particularly at running back, that Michigan has now. And I feel like the emphasis, yes, it will be on stopping the run. It should be. But I almost feel like they're going to be maybe too focused on trying to stop Denard, and that could eventually lead to big games by some of the other backs, particularly Toussaint, who had 170 yards last week against Purdue and two touchdowns. I also think, too, if Iowa is going to win this game, the defense has got to create turnovers, especially if Michigan does throw the ball, like you said. And I think this is a huge game for Sean Prater and Micah Hyde, because you look at Denard, you're right, he's not that great of a thrower, but his receivers this year, particular Hemingway and Roundtree, they've done a phenomenal job of coming back to the ball, because most of his throws are underthrown. They do a great job of coming back to the ball, making a catch, and then getting the yards after the catch. That was perfect. That perfect evidence of that came in that game earlier in the year against Notre Dame. But I feel like this is a game where the Iowa's defense has got to create turnovers, and the offense has got to hold on to the ball, because as we were saying earlier, Michigan's defense is going to go for the ball. They're going to try and create turnovers, because that's what they're thriving on right now. I just think at the end of the day, the Wolverines are just a little bit too talented, and I just wonder how Iowa's, especially the defense in particular, how they're going to respond after the letdown that they had there in the fourth quarter against Minnesota. So I think Iowa will keep it close for most of the game, but at the end, I see Michigan prevailing 27-17. I mean, anything that you'd like to say or any other thoughts that you got?
Well, my biggest thought, like you say, is that Iowa should be able to sit there and hang in there. That's the biggest thing. But like I said, it's the fans now. Guys should be prepared and ready to go. It's 11 o'clock kickoff, something that we're always aware of. I just feel that if the fans not there and they're booing the team early and often, you're not going to have much motivation as a player, But I just feel that if the fans bring it, we should be able to hang in there throughout the game. We know it's going to be tough times. It's going to be good times in the game, hopefully. It's just one of those deals, you got to weather the storm. And that's just the same thing we can say for Michigan. With Michigan guys that probably played it here in the past and know that it's going to be a tough environment here in Iowa. But if you weather the storm and be able to hang in there, you should be a dangerous team at the end of the game.
That's going to do it for this week's edition of the Talking Hawks podcast. I'd like to thank Tom Kakert from Hawkeye Report for coming on as a guest. Chris, thank you very much. And just a reminder, if you'd like to sign up to become a member of HawkeyeDrive.com, we offer a 3-day free trial. And then our subscription rates, we have $9.99 a month, $89.99 a year. They are recurring payments. They give you access to everything on the site, both free and premium content. For Tom and Chris, I'm Brendan, signing off.